How's it going, Ellen?
This is Ellen Thurston. That's who he means.
And this is Jake Ebel. This is the Thursday afternoon show. We're
it
back
is
from
indeed.
Our news break.
And John Friedman, alderman in the from the 3rd Ward in the city of Hudson.
Hello.
And lawyer and man about town. I'm not sure what else, but John has entered into a very interesting venture that I think our listeners would be interested in. And I heard about it through the Hudson Business Coalition, where he was looking for people to get involved. And is it fair, John, to call it a mentoring program? It's not quite, is it?
No, not really. It doesn't have a name. Somebody gave it a name, which I don't recall. The idea was simply that I noticed from reading in the middle school that there were a lot of younger students, and they were concerned about getting jobs when they graduated from college.
Oh, you mean the, wow.
Yeah.
Younger students as in how young?
Middle school.
Oh.
You mean the reading program where you read at lunchtime?
Yeah, Hudson Reads.
Right.
A great program. So they were talking about it.
At that age,
yeah,
they were worried?
Well, I don't think they were losing sleep, but they were having conversations about it, and they were aware of the economy and these things kind of, much more than I was at their age.
They've been watching the election.
Twitter.
Yeah,
right. At the
tweet.
Hudson Middle School, really.
Yeah, at the intermediate school. Anyway, yeah, so, you know, this was a conversation I had a couple of times over the years there, and I knew that the state curriculum was skewing more towards the STEM courses of science, technology, engineering, math courses, and I thought that was just really terrible because if I was a student now and they were trying to get me to go into that area, I would not be doing very well in school. And it occurred to me that in the city of Hudson and in the surrounding communities, particularly the communities that are served by the Hudson City School District, there are an awful lot of people who make their living in creative ways, not just in the creative arts or the creative fields, but also in creative ways. And a lot of them also got to those places, like most of us do, in a non-linear fashion. And I thought it would really be interesting to the students to learn some of those stories. And so that's all it really is, you know, folks who have an interesting story to tell about their work and how they got there come in and talk to the students while the students are eating lunch. It's taking place with the generous assistance of the high school and the administration of the school district at the library at the high school one Wednesday a month. And different businesses are and individuals are contributing financially to the budget, which for this year is a whopping $1,260, which is just for lunch, to buy lunch for 30 students and 4 adults who are participating, one of the speakers and 3 people from the school district who are there to keep an eye on things.
Right.
And that's it. That's the grand scheme. It's very not formal, and but I did put out a solicitation for interest of people who might want to tell their story, and I had about 30 people get
30.
In touch with me.
Wow,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. No, it's very appealing. I think I was looking to find the name because I felt the urge. I felt the need for a name. It's called Creative Approaches to Work.
Excellent.
How's that?
That's fantastic.
Good?
Yeah, that's great.
The word creative is slightly off because you mean something broader than the arts when you talk about creative, I think.
Yeah, I do. I want the students to see that there's, you know, there are many different paths and many different definitions of success and different paths to that.
Well, especially
what that success is for each person.
Especially if you're a beginner, you know what I'm talking about, Jake. I mean, somebody who isn't good at math or at these subjects that we're all supposed to be good at now, I would be a goner.
True. I used to be a professor at a law school. in a prior life. And I would tell my students that there's no difference between being lucky and being smart. And people always look at you cross-eyed when you first tell that to them, because particularly grad students, because they've always been told their whole lives in these kind of academic undertakings, you're so smart. And so they think that they are. And they are. I'm not saying they're not. Once I was one of them, so clearly I must be very smart. The reason why you're considered so smart, if you're good at stuff like that, is because our society really values words and numbers, not as much as it values pictures and music. But if we communicated in pictures and music, I'd be illiterate. So I'm lucky. I'm smart because I'm lucky. There's no difference between the two things. So people who are being told, like, you're not smart or you're not good at this, it shouldn't be the last word. That I just didn't want. Right. I didn't want students to think this is the last word.
Interesting.
And education now seems to be so utilitarian. Mm. You know, it's about getting a job. You go to college. Why are you going to that college? You can't get a job if you go to that college. Or why go? You know, go here, go there, follow this program or that program. And I understand people have to work. I mean, living indoors, eating 3 meals a day, it costs money. But education shouldn't be so utilitarian, I don't think. That's my own personal belief. I think education at some point is an end in itself.
Well, you should be able to follow the path that is meant for you to follow. And we all have different talents. It's just in my family, if I can use that as an example, my two brothers were 8 years and 9 years older than me, so they were sort of the first family, kind of. I didn't know them as well as I knew my sister, who was 5 years older, but my older brother was tall and handsome and, as we said, always had his nose in a book, and he wore glasses. So he looked smart, and he was supposedly the smart one. He was the one that should go to college. And that's exactly what happened. And it was a time when, of course, boys got more attention about going to college than girls because they had to earn a living and support the family in later life. But anyway, my second, the younger of the two brothers, who just passed away at the age of 92, he wasn't seen as the dumb one, but he portrayed himself as that. He was a real outdoors person, a hunter, a trapper. He tried to grow mink at one point. He always went out and got his, you know, buck every year, fished and all that sort of stuff. But I remember he said to my cousin once, "You're the brains and I'm the brawn." Well, this is what happened to him. And it was luck. It was pure luck. IBM opened in the town, like two towns away. And they were just beginning. IBM was just growing. And they came to the high school and gave an aptitude test to kids who wanted to take it. My brother passed with flying colors. He didn't have academic education. He was, took shop and all this kind of stuff that was available. But so he passed. They offered him a job. He took it. Then he got went 3 years in the military in World War II, and then came back to his job and became a tool and die maker or model maker, I think they called it. It was a job made for him. I mean, it was perfect. And I said to him, "Well, what does a tool and die maker do anyway?" And he said, "Well, they bring you something and say, 'Can you make this?' And so you make it." And that was his explanation. And that was fine by me. I understood exactly what he was saying. And he was highly successful there. And you had an article written about him in the company magazine, and that was luck. I do think he probably would have gone down there anyway and said, if he'd known what kinds of jobs there were going to be available, he might have, you know, made the approach himself. But that's just one little success story.
Yeah. So everybody has to find their way.
Yeah.
And so we're still trying to find more people to come and speak. I guess now we're scheduling into the 2019 academic year. But if somebody has a, you know, really, really interesting story, they could jump ahead of the line. I'm really excited. We have a blacksmith coming, a Broadway projection artist coming to speak.
Do you know any of the stories?
Not really. Just kind of the broad outlines. And, you know, I'm sure they'll be able to tell. Everybody can speak about themselves for at least 30, 40 minutes.
I'm actually a senior at Hudson. So,
oh, okay. Yeah. Well, maybe you'll... I know that the guidance department is directing the invitations to students who they think will be particularly interested in the different speakers. So this month, on the 26th, our first time that we're doing this, is Jackie Thomas, who's a local young man, Panamanian by birth, and who's made his way somehow to Hudson, and over the years became a welder and turned that skill towards lighting manufacture and design. And he's a very happy guy who loves what he does, and it's kind of a unique calling, and so we're looking forward to hearing his story.
Is he doing his own design?
Because
he was working for Adlib.
Yes, that's where he works. But he just started doing some of his own designs, yeah. And that's
great.
Pretty exciting, and he's very excited about it. You know, I'm glad that we can do it. We're trying to have, you know, a mix of different cultures and men and women, younger and older, who just have something that they want to share that, you know, some people might enjoy hearing the story. And I know that the food at the school district is absolutely atrocious.
So you're going to have better food?
We're bringing food, right?
Oh,
we're
perfect.
Food, I want to be a speaker.
Everyone will appreciate that.
I hope so.
I want to be a listener. It sounds really, really interesting. I
think it will be.
Can you record them at all, do you think?
Probably not, because there's students in the room, and we'd probably need their parents' permission or something.
Oh,
I don't know, but... and we don't really want to have an audience. We don't want any. You know, we want there to be some interaction. There's no structure. There's no real plan, except that we're going to sit down and have this food that Bruno's is subsidizing, and some of our donors are subsidizing, and we thank Bruno's and the Keneally sisters very much. They're very generous, and when they heard that we were doing this, they immediately said, we're happy to do it. And so we gave them the first order. We're really thrilled, and the school district has made their not-for-profit foundation available to donors who want to donate to this program. Right now, we're asking people, if they want to do that, they should go to the Hudson City School District website, and you'll see a link on the left side of the page for the fund. And if you click on that, you'll see the address on Harry Howard Boulevard where you send the donations. And just in the memo section on your check, say lunch series, and you'll get a receipt for tax purposes from the school district.
Okay, I won't eat. I just want to come and sit and listen.
I think we can afford to feed you. that's...
I don't eat a lot.
A lot of people have asked about donating to this, and we're... So that's the mechanism that we've put together. Mm-hmm. And like I said, we're going to cut off donations once we hit the 1260 mark, because that's all that we have the need for this year. And when we get a little farther down through this academic, through this semester, we'll probably start up again, because after we do this two or three times in January and early February, we're going to be fine-tuning a little bit and trying to have some sort of a plan for the speaker list rather than just, you know, first come, first served, which is how we've done it so far. And we're looking forward to having a interesting...
Oh, I'm glad Jackie's doing lunches. It. He's a very personable
guy.
And
we have an acupuncturist and a wellness practitioner coming in to speak. And after that, a contractor, landscaper, happens to be a woman. So it's a little different. And then, as I said, after that, we have another 30 people who've already volunteered. So
very cool.
We got Jake here. He's a nascent beginning sound technician, I think. Maybe
yes,
he doesn't
to some
think
degree.
So, but
a radio engineer. Well, you know,
I also work at Club Helsinki doing sound engineering
excellent.
Stuff, messing around with that.
And he's
do
a
as
musician
much as you can.
To boot.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
Jake, were you still working with the man who was making guitars?
I am. I'm going to be. I haven't worked with him since over the summer, but
right.
I'm planning on going back to him.
What does he make?
He makes he's actually a cabinet maker. That's his, you know, that's what he's labeled as. He makes, you know, well, cabinets, doors, bar tops and stuff, but he also makes all types of violin instruments for people. So violin, the violin family, like cellos and double basses and violins. Yeah. So.
Wow.
That's cool.
Yep. And what do you do for him?
I help him out with all the construction
and
kind whatever.
Kind of like an apprentice.
Yeah. Pretty much. Yep.
Great. Well, I wondered about the guidance counselors at the high school. Are they helpful to kids, do you think? Or maybe I should ask.
The guidance counselors?
Yeah.
I think so. Yeah. I have a good guidance counselor. I like my guidance counselor.
Is everybody assigned a different?
There's
more than one?
Yeah, it's just split up alphabetically. So the first half of the alphabet, last names, goes to one, then the second goes to the other.
Scientific.
Yeah, right.
Very.
The alphabet is a great tool.
Yes, it is.
I remember in high school, I didn't know what I wanted to be or anything, and I took a home ec class, I mean major, so to speak, because my sister had. I didn't know what to do. And I really wanted... I wanted to be a journalist, and I did become the editor of the newspaper, the school newspaper. When you had to make the decision about which path you were going to take, I was too young to make that decision. You know, I needed help. This guidance counselor was, you know, whatever. And
my guidance counselor was not very helpful to me. No. I didn't get a lot of guidance there.
No, I didn't get guidance. And then at some point somebody said, well, if you want to go to college, you have to take, I don't know, geometry maybe it was I took. I can't remember. Something. You had to have something else on your resume besides home ec, where you learned nothing. Nothing. So.
I'll bet you can iron.
Yeah.
I didn't learn it there.
Is that right? What did they teach you in home ec? How to make a cake?
How to make a white sauce? A roux?
Oh, a roux, sure. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's useful.
There's
a lot of restaurants in Hudson. You could probably
get
a job here.
I didn't do it very well. I didn't learn it very well.
After all these years, has it gotten any better?
No.
No, I'm sad. That's sad.
Yeah, it is.
That's so
sad. But somehow somebody said you have to take some math. And so I think it must have been geometry.
It was probably geometry.
So I was put in this class. I was the only girl in this class of boys. I got an A. And I didn't veer towards math because my mother said she was bad at math. Therefore, I decided I was bad at math. Turns out I wasn't. I was a whiz.
Wow.
But
did you take more math in college?
No, but I remember taking a logic course and loving the logic course. I've never used either one of these. I'm a pretty logical person, but
Euclidean geometry did a lot of proofs, right? In logic, it's you know, this, therefore, that, right?
Yeah,
QED.
Yes, therefore, that. Yeah. Yeah, I drank soda and whiskey. I drank soda and vodka. I drank soda and rum. therefore...
I think you have a drinking problem.
Therefore, you have a drinking problem. Or therefore, it is the soda that made you drunk.
Ah, yes, right. Well,
because
toxic.
It's the constant in all of those examples.
And the ethyl alcohol. In its various flavors,
yeah, right.
And guises. You know, it's important not to mix those drinks. Keep them in separate glasses.
Hmm.
Otherwise, you get a real
bad memory. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Well.
Anyway, so, but I did have mentors along the way. I was good at watching how somebody else did a job. So I, you know, I veered off into the theater, trying to be in the theater, and that, you know, took a few years.
When did you become the tambourine player?
Oh, that was later on.
Later on?
During the '60s.
Yeah, in the '60s, exactly. In Greenwich Village. I lived in the village. I worked in the village.
That's probably where you were doing all that drinking, too.
Yeah, right.
You're lucky you didn't turn out to be a hophead.
No, I didn't.
No, that's good.
But,
See, that's an interesting story. Home ec to playing tambourine and being a drunk in Greenwich Village to...
you can leave the drunk part out.
All right. Tipsy in Greenwich Village. Not that it would set you apart. I lived there for many years myself. And
what street did you live on?
I lived on West 4th Street between Jones and Cornelia.
I lived in Grove Street.
Oh,
I worked
nice.
On Christopher Street. Mm. Anyway.
Back a long time ago.
The good old
ago.
Days.
Right.
But I had really good bosses. And, you know, you learn from, say you're a secretary, you're sitting at the, you know, you learn how to answer the phone. You hear how somebody else is answering the phone. You hear what the boss says. You see what he writes in a letter. You learn, you absorb all that. I learned from any job I had. I worked in a grocery store for several years before I went to college. Decided I didn't want to
be a grocer?
No. It taught me I did not want to be a grocer.
That's how I felt about my jobs digging ditches.
You dug ditches.
In Colorado Springs, where the soil is actually clay. It was hellacious, yeah. To bury cable TV cable. It was a horrible job.
Well, that's how you learned about cable TV.
No, that's how I learned about really horrible jobs. I learned about cable TV later on. I advanced out of the ditch digging.
That's
business.
One of the most valuable lessons, though, learning what you don't want to do.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
No question about that.
That helps, too.
I woke up every morning and dreaded going to the shop yard and going out into the field to dig ditches with my coworkers who were mostly homicidal.
Oh, great.
And a lot older than me and bigger and meaner.
Oh, great.
Yeah. And that's how I ended up going to college, because I decided a life of digging ditches was not
exactly
for me. So.
Wow. Really? Mm-hmm. And did you go to law school right after?
No, not right after. Oh. No. I didn't go to law school to become a lawyer, which seems counterintuitive to most. And while it was an expensive proposition at the time, it wasn't nearly as crazily expensive as it is now. Mm. I went to law school about 5 years after I got out of college. That's in those 5 years is when I was in the cable TV business and learning about cable TV, which is something that I
well, that was
a
good
about.
Thing to have learned.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I worked for this guy, and he was an immensely smart man who did exceptionally well in that industry. And the thing that was most impressive to me about him was that he didn't like to wear a tie. And so in the company, nobody wore a tie. And when the investment bankers would come to the office, the head office in Connecticut to... try and get the company to borrow money from this bank or that bank, they had to take their ties off before they could come into the office. And
that's so cool.
Right, wow. And this was in, you know, the early 80s, and I thought, you know, that's power. You can make a banker take off his tie simply by insisting on it.
Wow.
And
It's like leave your shoes at the door.
Yes, exactly.
Wow.
And I asked him how to get a job like his, and he said, go to law school. And I said, I don't want to be a lawyer. And he said, then don't be a lawyer, but it'll teach you how to think. At the time, I thought that he meant that was a very important skill to have. I think in hindsight, he was basically saying, and you don't know how to do that now. So go get some training. And it worked out for me. But
So what did you do? You became a lawyer after going to...
Well, yeah, it's part of the process. You kind of have to see it through to the end. The end result is that you do, in fact, become a lawyer. So I was a lawyer, but I started a telephone company in my third year of law school, and while that was kind of nascently doing its thing, my first year out of law school, I worked at Columbia University at the Graduate School of Business, and I ran a think tank there that was dedicated to the intersection of computation and telecommunications. And then my company got funded, and I left Columbia, and I ran the phone company for, I think, 10 years. And then it was sold to a public company. And then I got my dream job, which was to be the CEO of a public company. Just like the guy who told me to go to law school. Mm. And it was as bad as digging ditches.
Really?
I lasted slightly longer as the CEO than I did as a ditch digger.
No way.
Yeah, but I was miserable the entire time.
Wow, why is that?
It's just not as much fun as it looks. And you spend all of your time talking to other lawyers and accountants and investment bankers, not doing the work that you actually...
Wanted to do.
Mm-hmm. You know, being in a business, running a business, you were, at least in my case, just dealing with a lot of people on the phone all the time.
So it's not worth being able to have other people take their ties off?
I never tried that. You know, by then it was the dot-com boom, and you have to have a lot of power to get someone to put one on.
Right.
But it was all very interesting. And then after I decided not to be the CEO of that company anymore, I started practicing law.
Wow.
So,
which is what you're doing now, right?
Which is what I'm doing now most of the time.
And you're doing this community service on the side. I think
this doesn't take
wonderful.
Very much time at all, really.
No, but it's a wonderful thing that you're doing.
My goal is that it kind of takes off and on its own.
Mm-hmm.
I have some other things I'd like to do, but I'm starting to branch out from the law a little bit and doing some more interesting things with former clients and existing clients in their businesses. So. Life goes on, and I'm looking forward to leaving the city council in a year. So,
yes, you have one more year to go, don't you?
One more year, and that's that, yeah.
Did I mention that John is an alderman?
You did.
In the city of Hudson?
Yeah, and I'm done with that. So anybody who wants to run in the third ward, now's the time. But I should say, vote yes on Proposition 1, which is the fair and equal proposition on the ballot.
Well, we can't tell people what to do.
I can. I don't work for this radio station, but so you can take it out on me. But
dead air.
Yeah. So that's what we're doing at the school, and I hope it's helpful. I hope it, you know, opens some eyes for some of the students.
I think that will actually. I think it's you know, Hudson's kind of like it's an enclosed place, and there's not much room for outside-the-box thinking at all. So I think that's actually going to be pretty profound.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that from a student.
Intermediate.
So, and the school's been really supportive. The district's been very supportive of the idea, and they've really gone out of their way to help me and supported us with space and back office expertise and making sure that we don't get in trouble with any of their employees stepping on anybody's toes or anything like that. Cause we just didn't, I just didn't want any grief as a result of doing
this. I suspect there will be a lot of people who want to come and speak and that the students are going to be clamoring to go and hear these people.
Well,
that's
it'd be
my
great.
Prediction. I really think, it sounds immensely interesting.
you know, we could certainly do it more often if we had, you know, somebody to kind of administer it a little bit more mm-hmm. than I have the time to do. And we could do, you know, essentially different tracks of speakers. But, you know, that's, we'll see how well we do with just one a month and mm-hmm. one track of speakers. And
you know, I was just reading yesterday about Malcolm Gladwell, who wrote a book called The Outliers, I mm-hmm. think, about how people get to where they are.
Yes.
And it reminded me that I used to, in the days when I read the New York Times faithfully, I loved reading the obituaries because you saw how somebody got to where they were. I mean, these are mostly sort of celebrity names that you're reading if somebody is important enough to have their obituary in the paper. And to learn how, you know, that somebody gave them a hand along the way or something happened to them that was significant. And I don't know if you know about Billy Rose. Billy Rose was a very highly successful Broadway producer and married Hollywood stars.
An impresario.
He was an impresario, but I think he produced Edward Albee's plays, things of this sort, some number of years ago. But he started out as... I think maybe he won a contest or something, but he could take shorthand faster than anybody else. And he worked for Bernard Baruch or someone like that, and someone in Washington. And
taking
that's how he started out.
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing?
Sure. Everybody
long
starts
before
somewhere.
Computers, obviously.
Right, of course. And dictation machines.
But so the path, you never know what the path is that's going to get you to where you're going.
And I was talking to somebody else in town, who one of the people who's volunteering to speak, and as she said, we all end up in the same place. So we all know this. We all get to the same end. It's the trip that matters. You know, it's the journey that matters. The mm-hmm. the destination is boring, the grave. Yeah. It's all pretty much the same for everybody.
Yeah.
But the journey is different. The journey is what's interesting, and that's what we're trying to convey.
Someone said, I know this because I quoted it at my brother's memorial service. Someone said, some brilliant man said, all you need in life is love and work. And you do need meaningful work in your life, I think, to be successful at.
And if you enjoy what you're doing, it's not like work.
That's right.
All right. Well, let's hope it all works out.
Well, John, so tell us once more, if somebody wants to make a donation to this program, what do they do?
They go to the Hudson City School District website homepage, and on the left-hand side, there's a link towards the bottom, like an eagle, falcon. Hawk.
Blue hawk.
A blue hawk. Is it blue?
It is, in fact, blue. It's a large winged animal. And it says foundation. And if you click on that, you'll see the mailing address. Send a check. Once we get to the 1260, we're going to return them, if we do. I hope we do. And just in the memo of the check, please write lunch series so that the secretary assistant who receives the mm-hmm. checks knows how to earmark the funds.
Great. All right.
Thanks.
Well, best of luck.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Thanks, Jake.
Thank you. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks.
It's good talk.
Yeah.
Anytime.